It's bright, it's punchy, it's heavy, just like the old BOC, Joe Bouchard, in the golden age, one of the tracks off of his new album, American Rocker. And Brother Shane, you're the one who first said, that sounds just like the old BOC, man. And how great is that?
This is a much different album than the last one. And I kind of feel like it has that feel to it. I just can't wait to hear the whole thing. We've not heard the whole thing. We've only been able to preview two tracks like everybody else. But I mean, they're keeping the lid on this one pretty tight right till it comes out. And this is a good record, just right off the two tracks, man. Yeah. American Rocker.
Yeah, so good. The latest effort since his last album, Strange Legends. So it's great to see so much stuff now coming out from Joe, and of course working with his brother Albert Bouchard. That's awesome too.
Yeah, and Blue Coop, and of course he's gave us some really cool information on Imaginos 3, Albert's next masterpiece. Mm-hmm. And I quite like Imaginos 2. I like it considerably over the first one.
Yeah,
I really think it has the production level went up, and everything's just cracking on that. And we kind of got a scoop on that from Joe.
Yeah.
If you're the hardcore BOC fans like we are, Albert's going to be releasing that later this year. So
yeah,
stay tuned.
Yeah, and Albert talked a little bit about it too in the show when we were talking to him about the vinyl. I think it was one of the vinyl releases of Imaginos 2. But yeah, I mean, it's great to see, you know, both these guys doing some cool stuff. They play together sometimes. They have the Bouchard band, Bouchard Brothers band. I forget exactly what they call it, but it's them, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, Blue Coop. You know, there's the classic BOC stuff. I mean, we've said before, it's always going to be a great time to be a Blue Oyster Cult fan, right?
Yeah.
And this album is great. And of course, Joe brings out the Burning For You bass, which he showed us too. 40 years on, it still sounds great. He played it a little bit for us, and he played it on this record too. And that was the hairs were standing up.
Yeah, that was remarkable getting a little preview of that. Just and he's just going through it like it's, he could do it blindfolded behind his back.
Yeah.
But those boys, I want to be like that, the Bouchard brothers, when I'm that age. I really do. They do so much. They're so active. They're constantly, they go from project to project to project. Joe is playing on a Pink Floyd tribute album, An Animal. They a whole bunch of top-notch musicians are covering Animals.
Mm.
And Joe plays on this album with some really, really amazing guests. And we'll let Joe explain it. But
yeah, it's awesome.
He's also working on some other stuff as well. And Albert's and the Dictators.
Mm-hmm.
it just doesn't end. It's just so cool.
Yeah, it's like they're just, like you said, to be their age and just to be creating and inspired and hungry for it still. You know, nothing to prove, obviously, you know, but just, that's what makes it more fun, you know, that they just love doing it. You know, they do it because they, you know, they don't have to, they want to, you know.
And they're both just incredible musicians.
Yeah,
and
so gifted.
Played with one of the best bands of the 70s and 80s, and they're still gone, you know.
Yeah.
And we love to talk to Buck. We love to talk to Eric. But the Bouchard brothers, the stories just keep coming too. And it's like, I hope that Joe and Albert sit down and write a book. I really do, because there's so much material.
Yeah, so many great stories.
Oh, I have a feeling that they were probably one of the craziest bands on the planet.
Yeah,
when they were that mid 70s to late 70s, you know, when a strange substance made its way into most bands, you know, backstage room.
And in the spaghetti.
And the spaghetti.
Saying, you know, remember? We talked to them for 2 hours, and they told us all these stories about, it was a Buck or Eric who would have this special ingredient for the spaghetti.
Eric. You know, yeah. Eric, like, that's not oregano.
That was one of my favorite shows, just 2 hours talking about, you know, classic Blue Oyster Cult stories. That's show number something in there.
And we got Joe for an hour, and we got some more, and it's always it's always a pleasure, and it's always we love having him on the show. We'd have him on all the time if we could.
Yeah,
but we know he's a busy guy, but This record is a little darker. It has a little bit more of a Blue Oyster Cult feel, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I just, I love his voice. You know, I love his voice with Cult, and I love his voice now. And it just, it takes me right back. I feel like I'm listening to a Blue Oyster Cult record when I hear him. So,
yeah. And I was hoping for something like that. You know, I mean, I felt like the last record had kind of a real bluesy feel to it, maybe, you know?
Yeah.
And this one's, you're right, it's just so much more. It's straight up, you know, classic Cult. I mean, the guitar is just kind of wail. I mean, there's really unique sounds kind of coming out, and it's awesome. Yeah, I mean, and, you know, in the golden age, you know, they say in the release, it sets the, it's basically setting the pace for the record. Like that's kind of what they wanted to do. And Joe said that, you know, he wanted to kind of, he was inspired by the old 60s TV show, Route 66, the show from the 60s.
Yeah.
And he said that he updated the theme to be about the early shows of BOC when they began playing the big shows in the West Coast in the U.S. And back in the 70s, he says, in the 70s, his life was an endless highway. So he said, you dig? It was all good and exciting. So it's perfect. That's the statement that Joe put together after, about the album. So very cool stuff, man. Very cool stuff.
And My Way is the Highway has a really nice feel to it as well. You know, it's talking about brothers, you know, and the band, and they're, you know, conquering the world. They're out on the West Coast. They're driving, you know, from place to place to tour. They were huge out on the West Coast. They influenced a lot of bands on the West Coast, and everyone from Minutemen to Metallica to, to you name it, Dinosaur Jr. They were just one of those bands that, you know, did their own thing, and everybody came to them, you know, instead of the other way around.
Yeah.
A band that felt like they had to make the music that everybody wanted to hear and kind of sold out. Blue Oyster Cult never really did that until long after most of the original members were gone. And their last effort was, I think Kasim was with them, Kasim Sultan, both of which have been on the show, but their last record was, a very hard record. And I've always been curious as to how a lot of Blue Oyster Cult fans felt about that last record.
But yeah, it was different, right? I mean, it kind of took you by surprise, I remember, right? A little bit.
Yeah. Albert's on one track. They're still all friends, you know, again, a band of brothers.
Yeah. And which is great to see that at least, you know, it could be worse, you know. Unlike it's the opposite of the Shankers.
Yeah, the Shankers are very different.
Yeah, yes. It's very different. Yeah,
and KK and Priest for that matter. Yep, and you know, but, it's,
you know,
it's,
it happens.
It does happen, and we hate to see it. You know, because life's too short for this stuff.
Exactly.
And American Rocker is an appropriate name for it. Love the picture of him on the front. It's a classic old picture of him.
Yeah, so cool
from back in the glory days with that big bushy hair and kind of a halo around him.
Yeah.
And it just, and he always gets these amazing players too. He has Mickey Curry on this. Yeah, he's got Dennis Dunaway of
Brian Adams. Yeah. Mickey Curry from Brian Adams and Hall and Oates, right? It's amazing. Yeah.
Albert again. There's some others I'm forgetting, but we'll let Joe tell you.
Yeah, of course. There's the UK tour August 9th in Glasgow, and then Edinburgh and Blackpool and so many others. So there's a bit of a European tour there. And Albert will join for select dates. So very cool.
Isn't it cool how a lot of the older artists are, they're getting out there. They're getting out and around. But they're kind of doing it on their own terms. They're not doing like Whitesnake. They're not doing these long ridiculous tours. They're just going out. They're saying goodbye to their fans. They're getting out there and just playing for their fans in smaller dates, just so they're still staying viable. You know,
it's perfect. It's a way to do it.
Gary Newman, same thing. That's kind of cool when you got to that point in your career where you can choose how small, short. You know, Bruce Sedano did the same thing, kind of a short, intimate. You know, because everything can change at the drop of a hat. You know, everything can change.
Yeah, so. Wayne Kramer, same thing.
Which is. Which you saw, and how was Waynester? Because Blue Oyster Cult covered him.
Yeah,
one of the best covers.
Yeah,
Yeah, one of the best covers around, I think. But
yeah,
how was it?
Brother Wayne was great, man. It's a great band, and he was cranking out those riffs, twirling in circles, having a good time. It's a great crowd of all ages. It was awesome. It was really awesome. Yeah.
What would you say the best moment was for that?
Well, they did kick out the jams earlier. They did that like more than halfway, like not even halfway through, which was kind of cool, you know, because it got it going. And then God, there were so many others. Was it Motor City? What's that one song? I can't think of the title, but anyway, it's Friday night. but it was really great. Just a jumping show. Really good.
I appreciate, because you sent me the video and it made my evening because I was unable to go.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting in like two counties over watching your video on my phone the next morning. And I'm like, yes.
Yeah, it was awesome.
But they sounded so
tight
and good.
Yeah.
That band.
So good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just great players in that band. I mean, from all over, you know. It's an updated version. Of course, you know that when the album comes out, there's other people like Tom Morello's on it. So the people in the, you know, there's a lot of super, it's a very much a super group who's who on the record, but still yeah. Just, they were kicking out those tunes and it was great, man. Really cool.
And it's, and again, it's a completely different lineup from the Wayne Kramer 50th,
right.
Thing, yep. MC 50 thing that he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But, Blue Oyster Cult, a big fans of them. You're blessed, man. I'm glad you got to see him. So
thanks, man. Yeah, it's just, I always wanted to, never thought I'd have the opportunity, you know, let alone to talk to Brother Wayne. So cool, man.
We got to let our listeners live vicariously through us.
Yes. 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 That's why.
Because that tour was like, what, 7 dates tops?
That was it. Yeah. Just a few dates. That was it. Yeah. Yeah.
And he might come back. He might come back in the fall, but right now.
Because the album's what, October? Yeah, the album's October. So hopefully he comes back. Hopefully Brother Wayne comes back.
Yeah, and there's somebody else that we'd like to get that has a book out right now, and his name is Rob Halford.
That's right. Gotta get Rob. Yes, another book. Another book.
Another book.
From the Metal God.
It's Scriptures, which is, I guess it's apparently it's a completely, completely different theme than the other one.
Yeah.
Hopefully there's more dirt.
And maybe, because he said there was, after confession, there's going to be a lot. He said that there's a lot that he could put out there. We were like, we need to confess now. We need to pray. Because he put a lot in that book, and he said there's even more. I'm like, oh, really? Yikes.
But we got to at least tell folks, Dio has a very special thing coming out in the next couple of months with the deluxe edition of the one and only Holy Diver.
Yeah. And this is
huge. How cool is this?
Yeah. And this is like, this is a project that's probably been a lifetime in the making. And I just was so jazzed when I saw it. I mean, and how is that album, what, 40 years old now? How is that possible? Jeez. Of course, I'm almost 40, but still.
I feel so freaking old.
Yeah.
I remember it was like, oh, it makes sense. I was like 12. You know, I'm like, wow, that cover's nasty.
Yeah.
There's like a priest in a chain and a devil standing over him, and the devil's really big and he's throwing him in the water. But yeah, apparently it's got B-sides, demos, a whole bunch of unreleased material. And of course, there'll be live material on it. It's been a good year so far for really incredible archive music. So
yeah, that's what it's all about. You know, like take care of those catalogs, you know. Give them a little dust up, a little facelift, and you know, just
get it out there to the fans before the fans are no longer there.
Well, what do you say we get right into Joe Bouchard?
My way is the highway, baby.
Yeah, that's right. Oh.
So we can Hi, everybody. This is Rob Halford. The Moody Fuzz.
Hi, this is Steve Hackett.
Hey, folks, this is Rick Emmett of Triumph, and we're talking rock with Dave and Shane.
That's a beautiful picture.
Yeah, he's at the sun somewhere. There he is. There's our buddy Joe Bouchard.
Yeah, that's my old family cottage.
Up, I love up that. North. Look at that.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
One of those geese. That's know a, that, they've got yeah. a, that's famous, a New York? Famous person who took that picture.
Upstate New York, yeah. Way up there. Way up on the... That's Canada. That's a Canadian island. Yeah,
that's awesome. Right, that's incredible. Joe Rockstar, living the good life, even, and you can tell by the pictures that that serve as his avatar on Zoom. Welcome to the program. This is the first time making your video debut. Joe Bouchard here talking about his brand new album, American Rocker. The new single, My Way is the Highway. Well, yeah. You can check that out. The album drops June 3rd. Joe, we love you, man. And yes. I know you said something last time you had like a bunch of guitars that you kind of give their TLC to. And I guess you did so on this record because they are screaming.
Oh, it's a great sounding record. It's a fantastic sounding record. I picked up a few new things. I got a new Gretsch there, but I also use a lot of the stuff I had in Blue Oyster Cult. The bass on Burning For You right there.
That's the one right there.
So yeah, that's the go-to bass. Always sounds good. Sounded good in the 80s, and it still sounds good. So yeah, kind of mix and match, you know.
Nice.
Trying to sharpen up my skills. And
what bass did you use for Burning For You? Since you
were... That's a Music Man Stingray.
Nice.
Single pickup. Wow. 1980 vintage, you know. And you know, it was good. Martin Birch was the engineer and producer of that record. He was a bass player. He really, really had his ear tuned to what I was doing. So that was a treat, you know. Back in the old days.
Yeah,
so I gotta hold myself up to those standards, you know.
Yeah.
So Mickey Curry's back in this with this project with you, of course, from Brian Adams, Hall & Oates, Alice Cooper, of course, of course Albert Bouchard, your brother, will be joining you for a selection of shows, and I think on the record too, right? I mean, what's it like to kind of have the gang back?
He brought the cowbell. He brought the cowbell to the record. I know it's going to be a big hit.
SNL's coming.
No, but he
SNL will be knocking.
we always share what we're doing, you know. So right. He said, hey, you know, you got to do something to that one, and this one needs a little more of that. And if that one had a cowbell part on it, it would be, you know. And that's he actually picked the single too. He thought that was the most rocking one. So you got to get the energy out there, you know. There's lots of good stuff, lots of depth to this record, but so it was nice. It really helped out. I actually played guitar on one track.
Nice.
He played guitar, and you know, so it was a nice team. We used a new guy to mix. This guy Steve Hardy, who does incredible mixes, you know. So the whole team that put together this record was spot on, as they say.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a very, very clean sound, very, very nice, crisp sound on the stuff that we've heard so far.
Yeah, yep, yep. That guy Steve Hardy, he's got the magic, you know. He's old school, you know. He's been doing it for a long time, and he did part of Albert's latest records, the Imaginos records, and knowing what they sounded like before he mixed them. And I said, whoa, I got to get this guy to do mine. So he did the whole album and did a beautiful job, all nice. From beginning to end, you know. And normally I mix myself, you know. But, you know, sometimes you need some outside help, you know. So I didn't mind taking that responsibility away from myself and just seeing what came up. I think I had him, he said, you know, remixes, no extra charge for remixes. Okay. You know, this could be a problem for some people because, you know, they're never satisfied, you know.
Right.
But I think I only had to have him remix two songs, you know, and the rest, everything was just like, whoa.
Yeah.
I can't believe this. So, yeah. So technically, it all worked out great.
Yeah, I always wonder when you know something's done, you know,
yeah.
when you know it's done.
I don't know. And you know, generally I have as much time as I want, you know. And I'm kind of amazed that this one, you know, the last record, Strange Legends, you know, was out in 2020. So this is only, you know, 2 years, a little less than 2 years to come up with something all new. Of course, because I was home with the lockdown,
right.
I had the time to write and rewrite and then think about it and write it again, you know.
That's
so
right.
there was a lot of rewriting. I wrote the most lyrics I ever wrote for an album, for this new one that's coming out in June. And it was one of those things where if even the slightest one little word bothered me, I'd have to work on it and work on it and work on it. My good friend Ian Hunter, who basically gave me songwriting lessons. This is another long story, but
no, go for it.
But Ian, it said, if you work on a song and you only get one word, if you work on it all day and you only get one word, it was worth it. So I took that to heart this time and really polished the lyrics and thought about, you know, the focus of the album and, you know, what it was going to be. And I was feeling good about, you know, looking back at the great days of the 70s and 80s. You guys like the classic rock, I guess.
Yeah.
and there was a spirit that went along with that. And that is kind of like the theme of this album. A lot of the albums, themes go back to, you know, being on the road. That my way is the highway. Being on the road when you're 20 some years old and, you know, the crowds are getting more excited and the fans are coming out. I don't know. It was a magical time. So try to put that in the grooves.
Oh yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, since you brought it up, the Ian Hunter thing, we love Ian. How closely did you work together when he was trying to teach you how to write songs?
Well, really close. Here's the thing. I went to the magazine shop. This is up in northwestern Connecticut. I went to the magazine. I had just gotten the cover of my song, Astronomy. Metallica was putting it on their new album. So, you know, I'm feeling great. I quit my day job. Whoa, this is a miracle. So I go to the magazine shop, you know, in the next town over, and there's Ian Hunter. He's getting the international papers from the magazine shop because they carried all the, you know, the British news and all of that. But come to find out, he doesn't live that far from me, you know.
Wow.
So I said, Ian, and you know, it's great to see you. And he says, well, here's my number. Call me, you know. We'll get together sometime. So it was like January. And I just said, well, I got that cover coming out and I just quit my day job. I'm going to call Ian Hunter. And we had this thing. I was playing with Dennis Dunaway from Alice Cooper and Neil Smith, the drummer from Alice Cooper. And we'd have these Monday night sessions at Neil's house in a little studio in his basement. And it's about 45 minute drive from my house. Maybe, about 45 an hour. So I said to Ian, hey, Ian, let's go to Neil's house and we'll write some songs, you know, because I'm feeling excited because, you know, I'm on a Metallica record.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So to speak. The co-written song is on the Metallica record. So I says, okay, when is it? It's Monday night. You know, we get together at 7 o'clock, you know, go 7 to 10 or whatever. So I go to Ian's house and I say, come on, get your guitar. He says, I'm not bringing a guitar. What? Come on, you get a guitar. We'll all play together or something. No, I'm just going to observe. I'm just going to observe, as he says. So I'm in the car for 45 minutes with Ian. And we're talking about, well, you know, when you wrote this or, you know, all the way to Memphis or, you know, the ships or, you know, many his great songs this guy's done. And he's dedicated. He took me into his home studio, and there's all these folders taped to the wall. It's like, and each folder is a song. Mm. I said, okay, this guy is really doing it. You know, he's really doing it. So then that's when we started talking about, you know, him working with Mick Ronson, you know, and he and Mick wrote a couple of songs, but he said Mick didn't want to do the work, you know.
Yeah.
He says, if you really want to be a good songwriter, you got to put in the time. Hey.
Yeah. No, how obvious is that?
Yeah. How obvious is that? So yeah. 45-minute drive each way. So we're talking about, you know, what's going on in life and families and kids. And Ian's getting all these nice gigs. You know, he did an orchestra record in Norway. Something like that, yeah. And that was cool. He was telling me how it all came together and the orchestration and the string thing and how expensive it was. But it was really a great thing. And then, other things to talk about. Like, he got a call from Ringo. How cool is that?
Yeah.
He says, and his philosophy is, I don't want to do anything that I don't want to do. And I don't want to have a schedule. And that's why he didn't bring his guitar. And he says, I'm just going to observe. But he came up with ideas, you know. He would be like, we'd be in there pounding away, and he'd have to go out in the backyard because he liked to smoke those little cigars.
Oh, yeah.
He liked to smoke those little cigars, so he had to go out in the backyard. So he's listening out there at a distance to Neil and Dennis and myself, and we're working on a song, as we usually do. Jamming away, and then he'll come in and say, hey, I got an idea for that thing you just did there. Do that again, you know. Yeah. Try this lyric with that. Wow. So we ended up writing four songs that ended up on a, you know, independent release that Neil put out. And that was kind of like the my songwriting tutor. He was my songwriting tutor. How good is that?
That's awesome.
You know,
he had to have some Bowie stories and certainly Ringo stories, I imagine, right?
Oh, yeah. well, he didn't want to do the Ringo tour. Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
He was going to be in the All-Stars.
Yeah, yeah.
He says, you know, it's this, and it'd be so much, and I'd have to do that. But then Ringo calls again, and there's Ringo on his answering machine.
Save that voice.
You turn out Ringo.
Save that message. Save that message.
That's better than
You're not going to get his autograph, so you might as well save the message. Yeah. So he went out with Ringo, and I got to see. I think I got to see the show twice. It was fantastic. Oh my God.
Oh man.
You know, because he comes. Everybody in Ringo's band gets to do two songs. Mm. And, you know, of their own, you know. And one night he did a ballad that was not even on the set list. It was just Ian on the piano by himself. But then he would do All the Young Dudes. And he would get to that line in the song, you know, my brother's back home with his Beatles and his Stones. And the whole place just erupts. I was so happy for Ian because he was really kind of like the star of that All-Stars. He was kind of like the star of all those All-Stars.
Oh,
didn't get to meet Ringo, unfortunately. Mm. I mean, I was backstage, but, you know, it was, there, no, it wasn't going to happen. So that's okay. Next time, Ringo, you've got my number. Call me.
That's right. Call Joe Rockstar. You know it.
I wouldn't hesitate.
No way.
I'd call you back on the first call. Anyway, that's my Ian story. And he's a great guy because we go back. In fact, the first time we ever played in California was with Mott the Hoople. Mm. It was at the Hollywood Palladium. There was an unknown guy in the middle, Joe Walsh and Barnstorm. We were the opener. Wow. Joe Walsh in the middle. And Joe was really great. He's a great guy. And the headliner was Mott the Hoople. And, you know, our first ever show in California, which, you know, California was a huge state for us, you know, back in the day. And it all started with, you know, Hollywood Palladium and then the Long Beach Arena and then the stadiums and, you know, fantastic time, which is part of My Way is the Highway.
Yeah.
It's riding down the road, Highway 101, you know?
Yeah. I love the lyrics to that song. It just takes you right back.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm, you know, it's kind of like I'm a fan of the old Route 66 TV show. It's way before your time. But when I was a little kid, that was the greatest show. Two guys in a Corvette driving all over the country, you know. And so that's kind of like the inspiration for My Way is the Highway, Route 66 and that thing. So, yeah.
It's great to get out.
I had some chords, and all of a sudden, the words popped out. You know, worked on it. Second verse, I always had to like rewrite that second verse, make it work. But it's a lot of fun, and Mickey just, you know, and the cowbell. That cowbell part is like gold.
It's a trademark. It's in the bloodline. It's in the family bloodline. And that's a great song to cruise. It's a beautiful day. Summer cruise, crank it up.
Yeah, top down. Go for it.
Yeah.
I love the brothers line in that song, Joe.
Yeah. Was
that kind of a reference to Albert?
You guys
were all brothers, though.
But we were all brothers. And even if it's just your weekend motorcycle gang, you know, that you go out with, you know, that's, it relates to all of those type of people, you know, so, but having fun. So it's part of it. You guys probably haven't heard the rest of you just heard the single?
Just the single. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just the single.
Yeah. It'll be coming out. We got another single coming out in about a week and a half. Just finished the video for a lyric video for that.
Nice.
And
What I just kind of going to that era, Joe, when you were talking about Dennis and Neil and stuff with Alice Cooper, how important was Alice Cooper? I know you guys kind of bonded because neither of your bands kind of fit in with the scene at the time. Like how important was Alice to everything, just rock and roll and you guys?
Yeah. Well, excuse me. our first tour was with the Birds, and it was not too successful.
That's a wild.
The Birds, and it wasn't. It was really Roger McGuinn's solo album, band. Great band, you know. Clarence White on the guitar and Gene Parsons or Skip Batten. They were all good, and they put on a great, you know, hits of the Birds show, you know. And so we were stuck as the opening act. No, we weren't even, we were the middle act. The opening act was Mahavishnu. It was John McLaughlin, Mahavishnu, like, you know. And I said to myself, you know, I know he's played with Miles Davis, but, you know, it's not going to fly, this jazz stuff. Little did we know how good they were. They were amazing. You know, and we had to follow them for like 10 shows in a row. And they kept, the first show, they weren't that good, you know. Second show, they got a lot better. Third show, it's like, oh, my God. So we were stuck in the middle, and then everybody's waiting for the Birds. So after that tour, we said, oh my God, what are we going to do? And so we went to see Alice Cooper. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. I've heard a lot about Alice Cooper, but I didn't think it was going to be that good. It was tight. It was like, you know, really tight. And it's had a story arc of, you know, Alice being the bad guy, and then he gets punished and he has to pay the price, and then he comes back to life. How good is that?
Yeah.
So these Odd Guys, you know, who really were a real band in those days, a real band, really invented all the stuff themselves. And we're saying, well, you know, we were trying to compete with the Birds, you know, this is really where it's at. And from the first show that we played with Alice Cooper, the crowd went crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, it was night and day. It was like, you know, like, I want to hear Tambourine Man, you know, to like, whoa, the crowd was ready for anything. They were ready for anything. So we gave it to them. We had our whole thing. We had a triple drum solo. We only could play for a half hour, but it didn't matter. We had broken through to a new audience, young, very young audience, you know. And
So that was the turning point. They're like, oh, the biggest moment right there. Like,
if it wasn't for that tour, you would never heard of us.
Wow.
We might have somehow connected, but that was like a giant leap forward, you know. And we appreciated the fact that they were so odd, this band, that they, you know, and then, you know, they had hits, and the show was like not incredible. It was a compact, you know, they had a great lighting guy. Everything was just like, wow, this is too much. So we revamped our show. We spent 2 months, you know, playing our show from top to bottom. You know, we can do this, and then we came out and toured our butts off for 4 or 5 years. You know, finally connected with a hit song, which was good, and it was all good.
Yeah. What a turning point. So cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So cool. Rest was history. Yeah.
And it's still, the catalog does great. You know, streaming has been great for the band. I don't know why. I mean, a lot of people from that era are, you know, kind of in the rear view mirror by far, but it doesn't seem like it with the Blue Oyster Cult songs. Yeah. That makes me want to write more and record more, you know. Well, you never know. You never know.
Well, then the dream would be like surviving members of that band. I mean, I know Dick Wagner is no longer with us and some others, but like, you know, whatever could be put together with Alice Cooper and then, you know, a Blue Oyster Cult tour or just a show. I don't know. That would be a dream, but, you know, Alice is doing his own thing. So,
Everybody is, you know.
Everybody is, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Dennis has got to play with Alice a few times. They did a really nice tour in England. So, you know, and they just come out for the encore.
Yeah.
You know, the original guys, you know, the surviving original guys. So Dennis is happy. We're working on things.
Yeah. Are you guys doing another Blue Coop release in the near future?
Yes. That's, now that I got my solo album in the can done, we have a double disc coming out, DVD and CD, with a bunch of different tracks from different eras. We've got an animation. We got some live tracks. It's kind of like a nice package that'll be out probably, I'm not sure, probably in the fall. It's being mixed now, and we're just getting the mixes from this guy who mixed my record. So, the whole package is being worked out. It's going to be really great, and we're playing some shows in July with Blue Coop.
Yeah.
We Upstate New York Festival we're doing, and then we go up to Canada for 5 shows. It's going to be a lot of fun. Haven't been there in a while. And then the Bouchard brothers go to Scotland and England in August. Knock on wood, you know, if everything works out. You know.
Going back to the animation, I think you said, or your brother said last time, that it's a rock and roll story, and if you don't like it, you're dark inside. Or something like that.
Yes. Yes, it's awesome. Jump the Gun is the animation. From the wild mind of Dennis Dunaway. You know, and Dennis goes back to the days of Frank Zappa.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I said, hey, Frank can get away with it. We can get away with it.
Right. Gotta make you wonder, you know, if Frank's...
You gotta have a good sense of humor.
Yeah. I just wonder, and Shane, you probably wonder this too, like if Frank Zappa came out today... Oh my god. Yeah. Oh man.
Oh, the protests.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I just thought of that. So I didn't get to jump.
They would invent a whole new protest for Frank Zappa.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So yeah, I keep that in mind when I'm working with Dennis. This guy goes back to Frank Zappa days.
Oh man, watch out.
If Frank Zappa coming out now would be like, oh, I'm a family coming back on television. it wouldn't work. No, it would work. But
yeah.
I guess HBO Max.
Well, he was
Max.
Yeah, maybe.
What would you say your most, I know that you don't like to record songs that sound just like Blue Oyster Cult, but it's still in your blood. Like what song on this new record would you say is the most BOC track?
That's a good question. I wrote this song called Off Season Hotel, and I'm really, it has a whole story about it, but of course the hotel's got to be haunted. I used to work in a resort, summer resort hotel. We were the house band in this summer resort, and it was really weird because at the end of the summer, all the staff would leave their jobs and head down to Florida. So the place would turn into like a ghost, club. Yeah. The club was like, where'd everybody go? You know, you have the big party on Labor Day weekend, big party. And then all of a sudden it's empty, you know? Yeah. So about 30 years later, I'm playing with Albert. I forget the Underbelly show or something. I forget what we called ourselves, but we got asked to play a Ghost Hunters convention in Florida.
Mm.
Wow.
So, okay, what is this? But they paid for our way down there, and you know, it was nice. They had all of these conferences of ghost hunters. Do you remember the Ghost Hunter TV show?
Yeah. Very well.
It was those guys. Those guys were there. So anyway, I sort of tied these two stories in together, you know, my days at the resort hotel and then going down to Florida, this huge old hotel, and the upstairs attic. They were sitting in the bar, and there's all these TV monitors, and you could see that they're connected to cameras that are set up in the attic of this old hotel. And everybody's just waiting for a ghost to show up. So I'm in the bar. I'm in the bar. They say, hey, you want to go on a ghost hunt? I said, sure. Why not? So we go up to the attic. They give us the headphones so that we can hear the ghosts talking. And night vision goggles. We got night vision, and we're taking videotaping. And then there's a guide through the attic of this hotel. It's like, whoa! Mm. So we were there for 2 hours, No ghosts. I was so disappointed. No ghosts. I was so disappointed. We had it
Sorry.
I love that. It's a song that I think has got some legs. It's called Off Season Hotel.
Yeah.
I don't know where the title popped up. You know, I do read a lot of poetry and, you know, make notes and stuff like that. So
yeah.
The story of the Off Season Hotel, it seems a good song. There's another one called Hounds of Hell. It's really spooky. You know, and then I write a song about Susie Deer, who was one of the characters in Astronomy. So I had to have a Hey There Susie Deer song.
Yeah.
And that really relates to Astronomy, you know, from 73, yeah. You know, but you know, that's a song that I wanted to write for a long time. And yeah. I kept got on the wrong thing. And I said, well, the whole vibe of this album is that up feeling, you know?
Right.
So I said, I'm going to write a up song about Susie Deer.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I don't know if it sounds like Blue Oyster Cult or not, but I certainly, you know, enjoyed putting that one together. Yeah. So, yeah.
The cool thing
about other ones. There's other ones.
The cool thing about, I mean, I can't wait to hear the rest of the album, but it's like, you know, like even looking at the album cover, which is so vintage, it's like, and this is just what we needed, just a summertime rocker, you know, like it's just, I dig that.
Yeah.
It's like the timing of the release timing's perfect. It's like, you know, it's going to be nice out. Everyone's going to want to get out after being cooped up, you know, no pun intended, cooped up.
So. Right. Sure. Blue cooped up.
Blue cooped up. that's a good cooped up. Yeah. Blue cooped up, top down with the blue cooped up. I don't know. I got nothing there. I'm trying.
So,
do you have much time left, Joe, or you have to go?
Oh, I got as much time as you got. You know, I'm working on some videos today. Got just put a couple of together. It's always, you know, it's like, when do you know that it's done?
Right.
If you're working on a video, you know. And so I actually work on several versions of the video. So I've got, I don't know, over 400 videos on my YouTube channel, you know, all kinds of different stuff, you know, just real, you know, just odd live shows, you know, lyric videos. My last album, I decided I was going to do a video for every song on the album. My God. But, you know, we were locked down. What else are you going to do?
Yeah.
I got a video studio with a green screen. And, you know, the only limit is your imagination, you know. And you know. Excuse me.
Sure. Yeah.
I just took a COVID test. I'm negative.
Yeah, there's like a northeastern cough going on right now.
Yeah,
it's bad.
It's allergies. I was out in the yard taking care of some trees we planted. But I'm excited. The new album's going to be great, you know. Long term, I don't know. Albert and I plan on doing a couple more albums after.
Okay.
He's in the process of his third double album for Imaginos.
Yeah. Yes.
And
can you tell us anything about that? Can you give us any secrets or updates?
It's let's see. It's good. Well, I was amazed that Imaginos 2 just blew me away. I mean, like, I just like, wow. You're hearing, you know, OD'd on Life itself and a whole new light. Yeah. And it really was cool. And so then Albert asked me to join his band. So I'm in the Imaginos band, and we had one performance in Massachusetts, a month or so ago. And that was a lot of fun. Really, really great band. And I get to play keyboards in that band. So, I'm the organ piano player, organ piano player in that one. So I get to do different things. And he's working on the third one now. So he set a pretty high bar with the, you know, usually sequels don't match up to the original, but I think his Imaginos 2 really was good. So that makes the pressure on Imaginos 3, but he's got a lot of great ideas, very creative guy, and I'm ready to dive in and help him anytime. So,
yeah, he's doing a dictators thing too,
and he's
right?
doing a dictators thing too.
You guys are busy,
and he's been working with Robert Gordon, and he had a bunch of songs that he wrote with Robert Gordon a while back, but it looks like they're finally going to come out this year. Of course,
nice.
We're all getting older, you know. You've got to do it now. Oh no, I'll just do it in a couple of years from now. No, you got to do it now.
No procrastinating.
It sounds like a lot of fun, you know, and he enjoys that too. I guess he's just a maniac, you know. Mm-hmm. We'll see. He'll be 74 next month.
Man, just unstoppable.
No, 75 next month. Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Who knows?
I think rock and roll is just like, it's just a number. Like, I mean, you proved that. Like, I saw Wayne Kramer Saturday. He's 74 years old.
Yeah.
And the guy just moves like he's young. I mean, yeah, of course, you know, we all get older, but it's like, it's just that rock and roll spirit keeps you young, right, Shane? Don't you I mean, I'm not
yeah,
saying,
I'm,
right,
yeah,
Shane.
I agree.
I'm not saying that I'm because of the gray hair, that. Shane. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
No. I'm saying you said that point. You made that point. That's not what.
Yes.
He's going to kick my ass after this, Shane.
Oh, I'm dying to see that tribute to the MC5. You
it's
know?
Great.
Yeah.
I hope it's coming Saturday. My way, you know. And you know, we were one of the first to do Kick Out the Jams.
That's right.
We had the live version. That's tremendous
Love
live
it.
Version of that song, you know.
Yeah.
And because they go, the guys in the band go back to the early days of Elektra Records. And I remember when I moved into the house, they had all these singles.
Yeah.
These singles, Kick Out the Jams. Like, oh, that sounds pretty good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So back in 1979, I think we decided we were going to cover that, you know. It was maybe 69, 70, you know, 10 years later. Let's just do Kick Out the Jams, you know. And I think Wayne was pretty happy we did that, you know, because then it's been covered, you know, 50 times since then, you know.
Yeah.
It's iconic, you know. So,
You were buddies with Fred, too, weren't you?
I didn't know Fred, but mm-hmm. Patty was, right. You know, our collaborator and married Fred. And heard a lot of stories about Fred and Patty, yeah. Reading her books, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good books. Really good books.
Yeah.
Crazy. Amazing stories.
Yeah.
Like
amazing stories.
What I for some reason I thought she dated somebody in Blue Oyster Cult, but
oh yeah, Alan.
Alan, that's right.
7 years they lived together.
Yeah.
They had a
wow.
they lived in a lot of old apartments, but you know, in the end they had a beautiful apartment. I used to hang out at their apartment in the city.
Mm.
And they had a beautiful apartment at 15th Avenue, which is right by Washington Square.
Mm.
And Alan retired the piano that he was using on stage, this beautiful Steinway piano. And it was right in the window of the corner apartment. Oh, what a beautiful place they had. But they didn't get along.
Mm.
And Patty moved down to Fred, and Alan... It was a traumatic for Alan. I never really talked about their, you know, life with Alan, but you know, they seemed to be getting along pretty well, but she was, you know, on her direction and, you know, Alan, I don't know, was jealous or whatever, but, then Alan got married to somebody else too. So,
Those days,
rites of passage are growing it, right?
As you get older. Rites of passage.
I know you toured with Judas Priest for, and they're somewhere.
We did some festivals with them.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on Priest making it into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? And do you think that will increase your chances, or do you care about that kind of stuff?
I don't know. There's such a long list, and we're towards the bottom of that list.
What was that thing you saw, Shane? It was
stats. It
depends
said,
on who you talk to.
Yeah,
yeah. It says. I'll read it to you. It says your induction chances are 26%.
Oh, all right.
Ridiculous.
It's better than zero.
it says that Blue Oyster Cult will be inducted into the Rock Hall the projected year of 2035.
Oh, my God.
That's a joke.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know.
But
you
Eminem's in there now. He's great. Love Eminem. But
I mean, the early days, of course, we've been through the history. The early days, everybody deserved it. And now it's just a controversy one time after. But Judas Priest, on the other hand, and specifically Rob Halford is a phenomenon. He's a phenomenon. I went to see Ozfest.
Yes.
This is about 10 years ago. About 10 years ago, Ozfest. And it was good because it was an all-day thing. Didn't get there until like halfway through, but I got to see Slayer and then Judas Priest and then Black Sabbath.
Yes.
First of all, Slayer was really, really good. Judas Priest came out and just blew him away. And I was just stunned. I was stunned how good it was. And then, of course, Black Sabbath took a long time to go on after Judas Priest. But they finally went on, and it was the best Black Sabbath show. I've probably seen 50 Black Sabbath shows. Mm. It was the best Black Sabbath show I ever saw. I wondered what Ozzy was going to do because he had that comedy show on TV. Is he going to goof with the audience? No, he was the nasty, crazy Ozzy. But
Prince of Darkness, yeah.
If you compare the two, Rob Halford had the edge that day, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm looking around, I'm saying, I'm the oldest guy in this. I'm the oldest guy in this. It was down outside at Jones Beach.
Okay.
I'm the oldest guy here. You know, what am I doing here? I don't even know. And then I got to see some of the best metal, hard rock performances that I've ever seen in my life. I don't know. Maybe it was just the weather, but they knocked it out of the park. And, you know, we'll see.
That was such a great era.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, I missed that festival. I saw so many. That's the only way I saw Motorhead. I never would have seen them otherwise. They came out.
Right.
They weren't even on the main stage. They kind of put a stage together, threw some amps up, and they just went for it. Yeah. It was like the coolest moment ever.
It was an Ozfest or one of those?
Yeah, things? Ozfest. Yeah. 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 So I think 2005, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what a festival, man. Yeah. Oh, man. But I mean, getting back to Shane's question just for a minute, like, does the Rock Hall mean to you personally? Does it matter? I mean, or is it like Paul Stanley once said, the Rock Hall's walk in the streets. It's the fans, you know, there's nothing to prove. Of course, they had to go in at one point to the Rock Hall because he said it looked foolish for them not to be, you know, in the eyes of the Rock Hall. But does it matter to you? Or, I mean, you have nothing to prove, obviously.
No. Well, it'd be nice. It would be nice. It'd be nice for the fans, you know, the people that I've got to say that, you know, I don't think I would be like Todd Rundgren, kind of ignoring them or Sex Pistols sending a nasty note. No, I would be very honored and polite and non-rock and roll. but you know, we'll see, you know, if the winds of change, you know, I keep hearing, I've played at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame probably about 5 times. Mm. Dennis always set this up. It was a very important thing for Dennis to be inducted with Alice Cooper, you know.
Yeah.
It really that era, they were so special. That band was so special that you know, it was about time, you know. So I was, and Dennis would set up these events there. You can't really play there, but he would have a book event. So we'd add a little music to the book event. You know, we played with the, you know, school of rock, all stars out on the plaza, you know, and every time we go there, they just say, "Hey, you guys are going to get in. It's only a matter of time." Okay. You know, we had a change of management, you know, and you know, it does open it up a little bit, but I don't know. It's so controversial, you know.
Yeah.
It's so controversial, you know. You know, I don't know.
At least you're not Ted Nugent.
No.
I don't think Ted's ever going to get in.
No, it's hard to say. It's hard to say. Yeah. Who knows? Maybe they'll have a year when it's Blue Oyster Cult and Ted Nugent.
Oh, that'd be something, right?
all the guys you never, ever thought had a chance. They would just put them all in one year. Just skip everybody else that's ahead on the list. Just jump to the end of the list. Put them in. Get it over.
Right. I wonder sometimes if it should just be the Music Hall of Fame, some people say, because there's great artists in there who aren't rock and roll, and they're fantastic artists, you know, but it's it's not rock and roll. Oh, I don't know. That's even more of a debate.
Save it for another day. It's exhausting, I believe in, you know, let's just move on to the next thing, and you know, get some new music out there. People like it. That's great. You know, it probably won't, you know, move any mountains like Alice Cooper did.
He died and came back to life.
Top yes, that. No, you gotta put him in. He's immortal.
I just always thought it would be nice to have bands while they were still here,
right? It's true.
On Earth, that's get true. Inducted instead I of more contemporary.
I strongly artists. Believe that Chubby Checker should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He changed the world.
Yeah,
the Twist changed the world. You know,
pioneer. Yep.
And you know,
and Limbo Rock.
Limbo Rock.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. I'm a fan of Chubby's.
Oh, he's fantastic.
He's a great guy.
Oh man.
But anyway. Yeah. So, but you know, he's probably got less than 26% chance, you know, or whatever, you know. So it comes down to some personal thing. I don't know. Personal taste, and you know. Like I say, that would be funny. 1 year, we just put everybody from the bottom of the list. Get them on. Get them out of there.
Right.
And then move on.
You get a ribbon, and then you go. No.
I'm teasing. Go ahead. I think it's nice to see harder edged bands and heavy metal bands starting to get in now, because that's definitely going to open the door.
Right.
It's important. They influenced a lot of groups. All you guys.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. And I don't know. I try to find like some rock today that gets me, you know, even mildly excited. It's hard. It's very hard. I'm sure it's out there, but it's just buried amongst, you know, all the pop and dance and hip hop and, you know, I don't know.
Is there anybody that stands out? I mean, I know people talk about Greta Van Fleet and bands like
Greta
that.
Greta Van Fleet, yeah.
Anyone? Yeah. Anyone stand out?
Yeah. I mean, they do a great show. They're great performers. Of course, it's nothing new.
Right. That's true.
But what is new?
Yeah.
I don't know. That secret key, you know, that unlocks the imagination. You know.
Yeah.
I'm a Black Crowes fan, and a lot of people say they're contrived, but hey,
I like Black Crowes a lot. Yeah. What a great album they did back then, and they still sound great, you know.
Yeah.
Just rock and roll.
Yeah.
Speaking of rock and roll, could you show us that bass, the Burning For You bass? I love history like that. I had to ask. I'm sorry. If you don't mind.
Wow.
I got to screenshot this. Put this up on the YouTube channel. That
this is the
1980.
So cool.
Yeah, this is a magical bass. I've been, you know, I put a little piece of foam in there.
Yeah.
To sort of get that sort of thumpy sound.
God, that's vintage. I love it.
Yeah. You know, and I've messed with the neck a dozen times. You know, sanded it down. Oh, it still needs some more work.
What is the sanding down?
Put it on the bench. Put it on the bench. And it's a very simple bass with just one pickup. And it's got lots of low end, lots of high end. They made a new version of this that has a middle control. I should get one of those.
Yeah.
It was making a little noise, so I put a little piece of wire in there, you know. You do little things on that. Yeah, all original yeah. stuff.
What does the sanding down do when you do that? What does that do?
Oh, just to smooth out the neck. Sometimes you get the thing called fret sprout when the neck dries a little bit and the frets stick out. So you have to go in there with your files and, you know, make smooth as glass. I played on them. One of the things that you may have not have heard, but you should look it up. I played on a Pink Floyd tribute album.
And, yes. Animals.
I got this email out of the blue. How would you like to play on a Pink Floyd tribute album? I'm not so sure. You know. Cleopatra Records set this up. And then they said, you're going to get to play with Al Di Meola, Billy Cobham from Mahavishnu Orchestra. Mahavishnu, we go back to 71 or 72 with them. I've always wanted to play with Billy. You got the keyboard player from, Patrick Mraz. You've got the singer from Dream Theater. And it's me. What?
So cool.
So I did, you know, I thought, well, it'll only take me a couple hours to do this. I really worked on it for about 3 days to get it, you know, to get it right. Because there's like double bass parts. It's a double bass part you had to think. And then they finally, you know, I figured, well, who knows if anything's going to happen with this. You know, but finally about 6 months later, they send me a mix. And I'm blown away. It's fantastic. And Al Di Meola, you know, is one of those jazz fusion guys, but he's really not that much, you know, he's a young guy, you know, and he started with Return to Forever at like, you know, 20 years old or something like that. It was crazy. And
he's insane.
So, yeah.
A Night in San Francisco.
He does a solo on that song. It's called Pigs, three different ones. And you can stream it. It's really worth it because even though it's like 11 minutes long, Al does a solo that's Pink Floyd-ish, but still, and it's not like, he's not imitating Gilmore at all. He's doing Al, and it's like, wow, his style is so different, and he just makes it work, you know? So that was a lot of fun. And there's another one. They actually asked me to do another piece for a prog rock record. And
nice.
It's on my to-do list right now. I don't know exactly what it's going to be called, but it's new. Mm. It's all new. And if I could list the guitar players, but I don't want to blow your mind. There's like five guitar players and they're like all great. They're all great. So it's one of those where Billy Sherwood, who plays with Yes now, is the producer.
I was just going to ask you that. That was my guess. He's done like so many tributes. That was going to be my question.
Yeah.
He loves
doing it. Yeah. So he sent me a bass part and I've got to top it. He says, you know, I want you to do your thing on this. Okay. So, I started working on it and I've got to hit it more today, you know, but, these things come out of the blue, you know, I don't know why they picked me. There's 1,000 other bass players that are really, really play, but, you know, something about this bass put the magic on the, on the Pink Floyd thing. And then they asked me to do another one. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh man. I love it.
So, you know, I'm happy. I'm just happy. Remember me? I was that guy who did that, to, you know, back then. And we could still do some more, you know. Yeah. And I do it right here pretty much, you know.
That's cool.
You know. Does your bass have a name?
Yeah, I've never
named. Did you ever get a name?
The Burning For You. No? This is the Burning bass. This is the Burning bass.
In the video too?
I do name a lot of my guitars, but I haven't really. But this is Burning bass. For sure.
Yeah.
And that's in the video too, or
or on the album. I've used it on some of the other ones, you know. It's kind of like, because I play mostly guitar now.
Yeah, people, that's true.
You know, and I think every once in a while it's good to drag this out. I did a cover of the Kinks. I did an instrumental where this is a big part of the instrumental on my last record.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what, you know, what I'm going to do for this new album, but what a beautiful,
timeless. She's a beauty.
And I got the other ones. I got the Reaper bass, which is a Fender Precision. Oh, wow. And my Alembic, which is the Godzilla bass. That's Godzilla bass. So you got Godzilla bass, you got Reaper bass, and you got Burning bass.
I gotta ask.
It's all good.
Could we see those? If not, that's okay.
No,
okay.
They're packed away. They're packed away.
No problem.
You'd have to kill us.
They're in heavy security.
I know.
I have a security guard there standing outside the door.
Yeah, and those infrared laser lights, you know, that go around, you know. I had to ask, you know me. No, thank you for showing us that one. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's so cool.
But I do pull them out, and I do string them up. And then I put them back in storage.
Mm. Nice.
I probably used them for a few things, but what's that?
How long does it take to fire up a bass that you haven't played in a long time, or a guitar? Like, I know they take a little TLC, right? Like, is it a process or just?
Yeah, you know, basically check the neck, put it on the bench. You know, make sure there's no like fret sprout or, you know, with the frets. And, you know, a good fresh set of strings is basically all they need, is a fresh set of strings. Mm. This one sounds pretty good right now.
Yeah.
I've had these strings on probably when I did the Pink Floyd thing was a year ago.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, if I was playing, I remember when I was playing on tour and I would really beat up the strings. I would change strings just about every day. That was bass strings.
Wow.
Crazy.
Yeah,
I wish
wild.
I had that money now.
Yeah, how often do you change bass strings versus guitar strings? It's got to be...
Not very often, you know, but,
not very often.
But it makes a big difference, you know.
Yeah.
I did change the strings for the Pink Floyd thing.
Okay.
Because I knew that this is something that's going to be heard by a lot of people. And it really has proven to be a pretty popular track. You know, at least in the streaming world.
Yeah. Oh, man. So cool.
And, you know, so I put the extra strings. Most guitars, I'll change every couple of weeks. If I'm recording, I'll change. I'll give a fresh set of strings before a crucial recording, you know. But sometimes, like, if I'm recording, it's a lot of it's like, is it a demo or is it a finished thing? So if it's a demo, I don't tend to change strings, but if I know it's the finished product, then I definitely change the strings. And it's
awesome. So cool.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, thank you so much. I had to ask. I was like, wow, that's history right there. So cool, man. 1981.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
Donald had one of those basses that he used at home. Mm. And he says, you got to get one of these basses because it just, you know, and he's right. He was right. It really made a big difference. And in the certain, you know, that competitive atmosphere of the 80s, everybody was trying to outdo everybody's sound. So we started, you know, I bought a new bass and I had maybe five or six basses. Now, I was never like one of these guys who got to have 50 basses, you know. You know, back in the day, you had one bass. And right. That was the whole tour. You do use that one bass for the whole tour. But nowadays, I don't know. I see guys coming out, you know, handing off, you know, different bass for a different song.
Metallica, so it's like, weird. Oh my God. And they're all shiny and different colors. Yeah. And Rob's a beast. I mean, Robert's a beast. It's just like, whoa, dude.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He's awesome, though. Yeah.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah. He's awesome. So cool.
Yeah. Sir Paul's the same way.
Yeah.
Just a row.
Yeah.
Bass row.
Yep. Row of instruments. And they're all, you know, they're maintained to like, you know. Oh, yeah. Museum quality,
right? The best of the best, you know, tech.
Fresh strings every day.
Yeah,
well, it was like that when Ian was with Ringo. He said was incredible. He didn't want to do it, and then he says, it was great. They paid me more than I was worth. You know, if I had just an idea, like, oh, I want one of these amps, or maybe I should get one of those. Oh, we'll get you both. Mm. They just, you know, you need a guitar? Okay, here we got. Here's, we got this one. It's a, you know, vintage guitar, whatever you want. Just somebody running around, get you everything you want.
That's right. That's like, awesome.
Nice. Ringo, call me. I'm still waiting. I'm waiting on your call.
We'll put it out there.
Yeah.
Whatever pull you guys got.
Yeah, well, hey, well, you know, maybe a little, I don't know. We'll find out. Yeah. Well, this is just awesome, man. The album coming out June 3rd, of course, American Rocker. Mm-hmm. My Way is the Highway is the single. There's another single coming out. And, oh, man, this is so cool. So cool. Absolutely. Anything else you guys want to add, Shane? Well, thank you. Of course, Joe?
No, I'm good.
We'd love to talk to you when the
Blue Coop. Great talking to you guys.
Oh, yeah.
We'd love to talk to you when the Blue Coop stuff's coming out. So
yeah. We'll definitely hook up.
Because I have about 10,000 questions. So.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Sure.
We can't do them all, though.
Yep.
Well, we're going out in July to play some shows. It's been a long time. Been, you know, occasionally we'll get together for like a private party in New York and play something like that. But. So we'll be out and Dennis is just dying to talk to you guys.
Oh yeah.
He really is.
We'd love it.
I mean, you know, he's been sitting home a lot. He's ready.
We love it. Oh my God.
Yeah. We're ready. Tell him.
We'll get on that right now.
I will pass that on.
Thank you. Please do.
Thank you, Stern.
Yeah.
Joe, we love you, man. Thank you so much. Joe Rockstar, ladies and gentlemen, Joe Bouchard.
Great to talk to you guys.
Yeah.